Mr. Hirsch, reel four.
We marched every day to work, 5 kilometres. In the winter it was severe, the weather, minus 20, minus 15, and the cold and starvation, and it took a terrible toll of the working force. We in the fishing commando, we had to stand the water in these dreadful cold winters, and we had to sort out the fish with our bare hands and this sort of temperatures.
Were you able to take any of the food for your own use?
No. You weren't allowed to do anything. You could just... These fish were transported to Germany in water tankers. We sorted them out afterwards. Carp, flesh, all the pike, all different fish, and they were sorted out and then transported to Germany. But if any of us tried or we've been caught with stealing any fish, well, it happened once to us, a situation where our couple, who was a German, he was in prison before the war as a murderer. He was very much tattooed, a very vicious man, and the Germans brought him into the camp as a foreman, or they call him the couple. He once told us just before Christmas to empty a bucket of fish just for him to take back into the camp. We should take it back for him into the camp. And these fish belonged to a German lieutenant, an SS lieutenant. And when the lieutenant came back from fishing, he noticed all his bucket of fish are empty. And he asked us where the fish are, and there were several men and boys, and we would not say, because if we told against his couple, when we go back to the camp, he could beat us to death. He was such a savage man. So we were in the middle. We didn't know what to do. Eventually, German officer asked us who told us to take these fish, and we never replied. And he went up to a tree and he cut off a branch and he told us to take everything out for what we had, and obviously we had the fish hidden away for that couple to take back to the camp. And each of us got a terrible hiding. And when we got back to the camp, we could hardly lay on our backs. It was terrible, black and blue. We were this high-ranking German SS man. He was a very savage man. He came from Königsberg, Germany. Then we were marched towards a stream, and he noticed, after putting out all the fish from my trousers, or down my trousers, because I was wearing these high rubber boots, and he couldn't notice it. And the one of them, the tail stuck out, and he called me over. He took his revolver out from his holster, and he said, "Have you got any more fish on you?" And I was terrified. He says, "There is one sticking out in my trousers. Take it out." He says, "You took it alive and you've got to eat it as it is now." And he took his pistol to my he put his pistol to my temple, and he marched me towards that stream, and he said, "You took it as it is, you will eat it with the bones, everything." And I started turning this large fish and started eating it, and blood was coming out of it. And as I was chewing it, with holding the gun to my temple, higher-ranking German officer came up with a horse and a two-wheeled
cart,
and it started talking. And at that time, I had the chance, and I threw some of the bones and some of the fish into the stream. And when he came back, he says, "Back to the column." And when we got back to the barracks, for about 3 days we couldn't walk from the beating, and we stopped in the barrack. We didn't go to work, and that was unheard of in Auschwitz at that time. Our high-ranking SS officer came, who we worked for. He says, "What's wrong with you?" And we could hardly stand up. Anyway, he says, "If you're not at work tomorrow morning, I'll come and shoot you all." We were quickly there next morning at work, and that was already in 1944, around about nearing December 1944, and we worked in the fishery for about another month, and then we were transferred to other places to do other work. The beating every day, the starvation, the selections for the gas chambers. If you looked bad, they selected you. Obviously, you got very little food and a lot of hard work and beatings, so you couldn't look very well. And every so often, when they used to count you, they used to pick out so many people in some of the gas chambers. And it was living on a volcano all the time, because you don't know next day if you'll be alive or take the gas chambers. The life went on. There was hanging that we had to watch. And then one day, we heard the commotion, some Sonderkommando, they worked in the gas chambers of Birkenau, the crematoriums, and they made the revolt, and they escaped. And we had to stand there for several hours, be counted, and they made us jump like kangaroos, sitting down for punishment. It had nothing to do with us, but we had to be punished. Terrible atrocities were perpetrated in Auschwitz against the people.
Did you have anything to do with the people who escaped or tried to escape?
Not at all. They kept them separate in the crematoriums, so they couldn't never get out. Every several months they used to kill these people, so they should never have a chance to tell the story. And after that, we still carried on, and we transferred to different camps. And the last camp I was in, it's also in the perimeter of Auschwitz, to a camp called Poivre. There we worked on agriculture as well for the SS. And one day I was cleaning the barrack with two more people that day, and the camp commander came in, and he marched there and back in the barrack, and he said to me, "Call me over. Is the food here good for you?" I said, "Yes, sir, very good." He says, "We are thinking of putting films to show you here." And he was also with a very high-ranking SS woman. I think it was Emma Gries that time. And that was about January the 16th, 1945, 2 days before we were marched off on the death march from Auschwitz as the Russian armies were nearing. We could hear the bombardment from the artillery from the battles near Auschwitz. We could see German soldiers on the retreat. On the side of the roads going towards Germany.
What did he mean by showing films? Was it just some sick joke?
A sick joke, yes. They were. He says, we're going to show you films, and as long as the food is all right for you. Well, I mean, he was the big chief. He was the commander of Auschwitz, and he just went to inspect. It was just a sick joke for him. We had to stand for attention, and 2 days later, we were told we were marched out. That was the 18th of January 1945.
When you say you were moved from different camps to camp, was that within the Auschwitz area?
Within the perimeter of Auschwitz, yes. Because it was about 30 kilometers large, a camp different. There was Buna, there was Pavli, there was Budi, there was all different camps. Then we were marched out in the evening. Severe frost, wind howling, just this striped suit, no coat. I had the Dutch clogs, no socks, the rag around my feet. Excuse me. And we marched off, and the clock started rubbing my foot, the back of my foot, and I was in terrible agony. And as we marched on, we could see dead bodies lying. And as we walked along, there were hundreds of bodies thrown on the road, shot in the back of the head, because they couldn't walk any further. Those special units in the back, and as somebody couldn't go any further, just to shoot in the back of the head, not to let them to be liberated. We walked all night, guards carrying us with guns. They had a special SS unit, anybody which couldn't walk any further, just shot in the back of the head. And as we were walking, it was the middle of the night, and could see a plane coming, and let a flare out. There were factories nearby, and soon after, some bombers came and bombed these factories. We just stopped on the road, middle of the road, and just fell asleep, couldn't walk any further. And the SS allowed us to do that, just to stop it till the bombing was over. And then we carried on as before. We walked for 3 nights and 3 days until we got to the city of Katowice. On the road, there were thousands of people who had been shot in the back of the head. There were columns and columns of people marching. They didn't want us to get liberated by the Russians, and they tried to take us to different places to make use of us for work or whatever came in future. Eventually, we arrived in the city of Katowice. And there we were loaded on wagons and transported to Germany, on the way to Germany. We didn't know where we were going, but we knew we're going. On the journey, they gave us no food. Luckily, my friend took a bag of semolina, a small bag of semolina from a army warehouse. He stole it, and it was dry semolina, and that kept me and him going until we arrived in Germany. After several days, we arrived in a camp called Buchenwald, near the city of Weimar. There we brought into that camp, and we've been in plows and showered and put into other barracks. And the barrack where I was put in were a lot of Russian prisoners of war. Because as far as the Geneva Convention, the Russian army never was under the, according to the Germans, they didn't belong to the Geneva Convention. They were treated just as badly as us. I made some friends with the young Russian soldiers, Misha, and he spoke a little bit of German, and we could converse, and he was a very nice boy. And eventually they were taken away to a different camp, most of the Russians, from our barrack. And eventually, after about 3 weeks, we were taken to a boys' barrack, which were only boys of our age, a bit older. It was block 66, and there we had a Czechoslovakian couple, and he looked after us. We had a bit better living accommodation at that particular time. And Leon Blum, the ex-Prime Minister of France, was imprisoned nearby in Buchenwald. So in Buchenwald we were there till April.
Was this without working?
Without, certainly in Buchenwald. We children were kept on one side. Our age group, I don't know why, but there was a lot of political prisoners in Buchenwald, and they did everything possible to help the younger boys to not to overdo things, because the food was very, very minimal and everything. On a Sunday, we used to get two potatoes in jackets, boiled potatoes, as a special treat on a Sunday. And I couldn't eat the peas because they were burning me. So as I was peeling them, used to have three Hungarian people holding the hand under the peas, just grabbing it, catching the peas as I was peeling. I was starving myself. You can imagine the degradation, how degraded everything became with people. They became like animals because they were starving, they were swollen from not eating. And eventually, we were there till April. In April, we got an order one day that the Americans, we knew the Americans are nearing Buchenwald, and the Germans started taking out transport after transport, 5,000 at the time. And I was certain that we'd be liberated in Buchenwald. But it wasn't to be. One day we got an order and we had to assemble the square, 5,000 people, marched up towards Weimar, and put on open wagons. about 100 on a wagon. And they started shunting us around from place to place. And we had a journey. It seemed a lifetime. The guards were very savage. Ethnic Hungarians, Ukrainians, Latvians, Estonians, there was a mixture, and some German SS. They were very savage. They gave us no food. When they did give us food in the middle of the night, some cabbage water, a few pieces of cabbage swimming around, hot water, very salty. So everybody was dying of thirst and you couldn't get any water. And next following morning they would let us out near the stream, and as people, they opened the wagons, as people were running towards the stream, they shot people like into pigeons, or they just took pot shot and they just shooting at people as we're running to drink the water, because the salt, they put so much salt into the soup. Obviously, it suited them that way. And they were shooting us around for 4 weeks. And eventually, we arrived in a town in Czechoslovakia, where that was around about the 4th of May 1945, we could see Czech flags flying, and the police at the station were Czechoslovakian police, and we're the letters of the wagon, and we went begging for food, and the Czechs gave us what they had, the Czechoslovakian police and the people. And one of my friends, which was about a year younger than me, he went up to the policeman. The policeman gave him something to eat, and one of the Ukrainian SS men noticed that, and he got the barrel of the gun and he was going to hit him over the head. And when another Czechoslovakian policeman noticed it, he pulled out a revolver. He says, "You touch that boy and I'll kill you." And then we realized something was going on. All the SS men were taken off the wagons and marched off. As far as I know, they were all shot in the end. That journey started with 5,000 people. By the time we arrived in Czechoslovakia, it was about 500 left, 600 left. As they were dying, they had wagons for the dead bodies, and they threw them on the just skeletons. Everybody was a skeleton. From 100 people, you could see about 5 or 6 left in a wagon. We were brought into Theresienstadt, which was another camp. And on the 8th, we got in there, and we were in Theresienstadt several days, and we were liberated on the 8th of May 1945. And I've survived. After the war, for a while we couldn't walk from just skeletons, and the Russians liberated us. They gave us rice pudding and so on, and we slowly recuperated. A lot of them died after the war from dysentery and so on. They started eating rich foods, and they got dysentery and typhoid, all sorts of different things. And they died of like flies. in my room where I was with another five boys. There were six of us, and I was the only one which didn't get typhoid. Everybody else got typhoid. And many of them died after the war, after the liberation. And we were in Theresienstadt till August, and were examined, interviewed and examined by a British doctor from the embassy, and those which were fit to travel were taken to Prague, and those which weren't were taken to sanatoriums with TB and all sorts of different things. And then on the 14th of August 1945 were taken to Prague Airport and put on Lancaster bombers, 30 in a bomber by the Royal Air Force, and brought to England. We refueled in Holland on the way, and were brought to Crossley on Eden, that's near Carlisle, an airport there, on the 14th of August 1945. And from there we're taken to Windermere with 300 children, 300 boys and 15, about 30 girls, yes. And that was a life, that started our new life in England.
Why was there so many boys over girls?
Because the girls did not survive. I think the boys, they used more boys to girls as far as work was concerned. They presumed they were stronger, there's more chance of it, but well, girls didn't survive because of a lot of different points. Hygiene, and also they died off more, and I think that's the reason why more boys survived than the girls.
Do you mean that if you were working, there was more chance of getting food?
To a certain extent. Well, there wasn't very much chance. If you were caught stealing any food and like that, they could hang you for that. But some boys... Now, when I was working agriculture with horses or pigs or cows, I used to... On another occasion, I could pinch a potato and... while the assessment didn't look, they swallowed it quickly. But not everybody could do that. They didn't get a chance. Or when I was the fishery commander, after a while they told me to repair the rubber boots, those fishing boots. And as a bit after they finished giving everybody the soup, they were taking it back into the camp to be thrown out or whatever it is. And I used to grab it in my utensil, a drop of soup, and have it quickly, drink it down. So on another occasion I could do that.